The Bell Jet Ranger soared in on the Richmond skyline from the southeast. Bolin had been in near constant radio contact with Special Agent Cowlins since his stealth had touched down at Langley Air Base. From Norfolk, Bolin felt each minute turn into an agonizing eternity. As promised, a fresh black suit flight crew was on hand at Langley, and Brognola had delivered the necessary ammo to beef up the soldiers' depleted supply of firepower. The warehouse complex in question was a quarter mile east of I-95. Poorly lit rows of red brick and concrete buildings came into Bolin's sight as he stood in the rotor wash of the cabin doorway. Bolin's justice contact informed him they'd been made, but for some reason, Cowlins stated, the terrorists had opened the back doors to the truck, disappearing inside for nearly the past 2 hours. Bolin now ordered them to fall back and hold their positions, no matter what. Bolin couldn't be sure, but something nagged him about the setup. If the enemy knew they were being watched, they might have decided to just rig the truck to blow, sending toxic or radioactive waste flying around. The soldier had no choice but to risk exposure once again. With countless innocent lives hanging in the balance, if the soldier had to sacrifice himself in order to take the enemy down, so be it. Brognola would have to carry the torch from there on. Bolin moved to the cockpit, told his black suit crew to make a wide angle to the west, then come in from that direction, more or less, on the blind side of the enemy. There was only one truck here to deal with, and only one SUV and a sedan making up the motor pool. From their surveillance positions in an evacuated office building 3 blocks east, Cowlins filled Bolin in on the action. The truck's doors were being shut. They were pulling out. Bolin marched into the wind, gusting through the open doorway. The executioner looped the HK-33 around his shoulder and filled his hands with little bulldozer. Amin wondered what the FBI, or whoever they were, was waiting for as Abdullah drove them out between the long rows of darkened warehouses, the truck following closely behind. The main gate was open, and all looked clear to the street beyond, which would take them to the interstate. Nothing, Amin thought, would stop them now. The larger of his 2 remote control boxes was in his right pocket, the smaller box he was hoping to use only as a last resort. If he was forced to, he wouldn't hesitate to blow the truck halfway across Richmond. He was wondering if there was enough explosive inside to take out at least a few square blocks, and regretting that the last of the toxic and radioactive waste had gone west. Amin glanced in the side-view mirror just in time to see the cab of the truck go up in flames. Every single window around him seemed to blow a storm of glass in his face. It didn't take but a heartbeat for Amin to realize some of the slivers had gouged into his right eye. Amin knew it was finished, that they'd never reach the interstate. He somehow got the door open, glimpsed Abdullah out of the stinging haze in his one good eye, slumped over the wheel. The sedan was racing for the concrete wall of a loading dock. Amin flung himself into the wind. The chopper swung away from the roof, and the soldier drew a bead with the squat rocket launcher and began firing as soon as he hit the edge. The truck's cab went first as Bolin pumped out 2 40-millimeter rounds. The cab seemed to shear itself away from its cargo mounting, the housing behind it rearing up and through the fireball, then slamming down on the asphalt. The executioner already had the HK-33 in hand, running on, firing at the sedan, taking out passenger and back windows with a raking burst, then drilling 5.56-millimeter rounds through the roof, going for the driver. He scored the wheelman at least as the sedan swerved, roaring on a collision course with a concrete dock. A figure tumbled out the passenger door, found his feet, then headed for a garbage bin, the trailing SUV clipping the lead luxury vehicle's back end when Bolin caught the mixed bag of frantic English and Arabic shouting to clear the area below. The back doors were flopping open, the cargo disgorging, flailing about, most of them limping, but all of them screaming that he was going to blow the whole thing up. The executioner was racing across the roof when the sky lit up behind him in pure fire and rolling thunder. The door to the wooden housing that led to the stairwell looked flimsy enough, but Bolin wasn't taking any chances. He hit the trigger on the M203, blew the door away on the fly with a 40-millimeter blast. He could feel the superheated wind racing up from behind, heard it screaming like some living army of demons from across the roof as he hurled himself into the smoke. Bolin found himself tumbling down a short flight of steps, saw the glow of firelight framing a window as he rolled up on a landing. He felt and heard the volcanic eruption of the firestorm heading his way, could well imagine it taking out the warehouse facing, cleaving up the entire length of the roof. The executioner shielded his face with the HK-33 and launched himself through the window as rubble and fire poured into the stairwell above. The open dumpster garbage bin, heaped with boxes, broke Boland's fall. After rolling over the lip, the soldier had hugged the face of the bin. It curved on an angle, up and out, and he found himself covered as the sky dumped loads of rubble for a full minute before the pounding subsided to a few flying bricks chinking off the alley floor. The executioner stood and moved off down the alley. If anything survived out front, it would be a pure fluke. He found his handheld radio intact, raised Cowlins for a sit rep. The agent's voice sounded shaky. No casualties on their end. They'd hit the deck, but a few of them were good and dinged up from flying glass and debris. Cowlins asked for Boland's position, and the soldier told him. A note of urgency or disbelief broke through the ringing in Boland's head when he heard Cowlins inform him one survivor with a pistol and holding something in his other hand was heading the soldier's way. Cowlins said he was looking through his field glasses, and a moment later he confirmed a Mohammed Amin sighting. Boland picked up the pace, HK-33 out front and sweeping the smoke ahead. The blast had been so powerful, Boland spotted entire sections of the back ends of the warehouse walls that had been knocked down. Boland hacked out some of the grit and biting smoke, anxious to cut off Amin and end it. He slowed his pace, lifting the assault rifle, when the shadow limped into sight.
Amin!
The shadow whirled toward Boland, limped a few feet deeper into the mouth of the alley. The Syrian held something up in his left hand.
Do not come any closer! Even from here I can blow us both up!
Halting, Boland spied a hole in the wall about 3 yards off.
I know you Americans have no wish to die. You will let me go.
I don't think so.
What? You stupid fool! I'll kill us both! We both die!
You first!
Boland hurled himself through the hole in the wall. As soon as Boland was back in the cockpit of the stealth southbound, he got the bad news. The last terrorist unit had turned a chunk of Atlanta into a flaming kill zone. Boland found at least 3 or 4 blocks of the warehouse district in flames as his chopper lowered past the East Expressway. He shook his head. Brognola had passed on the story of the disaster. A police unit on routine patrol in the neighborhood of the Leland Trucking Warehouse called in that they had spotted 3 men with assault rifles watching 2 18-wheelers getting loaded up with crates. Other armed men were moving into the cargo hold. SCTU was monitoring all local and state police bands from their downtown post. Luther Jeffries, determined to track down Grevy and Powers, had gone in with a team, and the inevitable gun battle broke out. Armored SWAT vehicles rolled onto the premises. The terrorists, seeing the end of their jihad, made suicide runs for the police and SCTU and SWAT barricades, blowing themselves up. Not even Brognola knew the body count, and the word was Jeffries himself had gone down in a hail of gunfire. Finally, the terrorists had apparently mined the Leland warehouse. When SWAT and SCTU moved in, the whole warehouse went up, taking out about 10 police cruisers, 2 adjacent warehouses, and a nearby office complex. When the chopper touched down beyond the ring of fire, Boland hopped out. The soldier's face was a bruised mask of cuts, scratches, and dried blood. It was over. He couldn't even begin to count up the number of dead, some covered with blankets, others just left in the heat of the firestorm. Paramedics were scurrying around, checking bodies for a pulse. Somewhere high above the rising smoke clouds, Boland spotted the police choppers. They hovered or dipped into crisscrossing patterns, searchlights spanning wide areas.
Hey, I know you.
Boland turned and saw a black-suited shadow emerging from a swirling mist of smoke and light. It took a moment, but Boland recognized the face of one of the SCTU commandos from the garage in Boston.
Justice guy, Special Agent Belasco, right?
Boland nodded.
Where's Commander Jeffries? I heard he was hit.
The commando jabbed a finger toward a row of body bags.
Pick one. You know, I heard that Grevy and Powers might have had a part in this massacre. If you justice people had spoken up and shared a little intel with us peasants, this might have been avoided.
What could he say to that, Boland wondered. Sure, he could stand there and bounce around a dozen or more maybe scenarios. Maybe if he'd just shot Powers in that alley. Maybe if he'd had Brognola circle the wagons and send in the guns. Skip it. Bolin knew that if he hadn't proceeded as he had, a whole lot more innocent people would have perished. Or maybe if the forces here had held back and a solid plan had been put on the drawing board, instead of three or four different outfits bullying ahead, getting in each other's way.
Nice work, Belasco. Maybe you need to stay behind a desk where you belong.
The guy stormed off. Bolin held his tongue.
The Coast Guard found the wreckage about an hour ago, some point in what's called the Tongue of the Ocean, almost smack between Eleuthera and Andros. No bodies recovered.
Another smokescreen, Hal.
Bolin had taken temporary refuge in a motel on the outskirts of Atlanta to rest, regroup, and wait for word about Grievian powers. The only good news at the moment was that the dominoes on the edges of the conspiracy were toppling. Bolin's thoughts were somewhere else, down in the Caribbean to be exact, and he vaguely heard his friend go down the list of agencies and names found on confiscated disks who were getting snapped up by the Justice Department. He did, though, catch the note of cold anger in Brognola's voice when the big Fed informed him how either Greavy or Powers, or both, had just walked up to the agents he had placed at the airfield and mowed them down in cold blood.
These guys are mad dogs, Stryker. When I think about how many innocent people have died, how many agents and cops have been killed in the line of duty...
Brognola let it trail off. Bolin understood. He felt the same way. He wanted to be the one to hunt them down, though, and made that clear to the big Fed.
I'm already on it. I got all available resources doing round-the-clock surveillance of an area that reaches all the way from the Florida Keys to Venezuela and Colombia. The only chance they have of getting away is if they're picked up by the mothership and flown out of the galaxy. I still think it would be a good idea to freeze their bank account, Stryker.
No. When I find them, I don't want them to have the first clue I'm coming.
We'll do it your way. Now, here's what I've been able to line up to get you moving again while you're on hold and waiting for a sighting of those two.
Enjoying your second day on the beach, Colonel?
Powers smiled, sank a little deeper into the lounge chair, then reached over and plucked an open beer out of the cooler.
Indeed I am. Blue skies, green water, white sand, cooler full of cold ones, a handful of Havanas, money in the bank. Already sampled some of the local Bahama talent, and I have to tell you, it's nice to know this old war horse can still put a grin on a young girl's face. What more could a man ask for?
A shadow fell over Powers, and he peered over the top of his shades at Greavy. His holstered Glock jutted out over his Aloha shirt, and dark shades didn't mask the dark scowl on his face.
Hey, you're blocking out my son.
Greavy didn't move.
For some reason, I never quite pictured you in a pair of Speedos.
Hey, like they say, if you got it...
The operation never went down, Colonel. Put that in your nut-huggers and give it a squeeze.
I was beginning to think it never would anyway. Too many people were involved. I said that from the beginning, but like I've been saying, you've got all the answers.
True enough. That was then. Now maybe you need to start thinking about something other than your tan. The operation from the Sudan to the U.S. was 86th. By who or what, I don't know. You're getting a picture of our problem here, Colonel? Some of the people who helped us along the way have been busted by the Justice Department.
Justice Department, eh? Next, I suppose Belasco's gonna come swimming ashore, pointing a spear gun at us, telling us we're under arrest.
This isn't some joke. I'd tighten it up if I were you.
Yeah. You know, I was sitting here thinking, soon enough I'm gonna get bored. Most likely I'll take myself right off this island. You'll have the whole place to yourself. Could be it's best that way. You know how far Yankee dollars will go in Caracas, Bogota, Buenos Aires, Rio? I could live like a king the rest of my life instead of watching you stand there blocking my son, fucking with my head, wringing your hands like a little girl. Now why don't you relax? Put on some trunks, take a dip. The hard part's over. It's easy street from here on.
Okay, Colonel, fine. Enjoy the sun. Go on, take your nap. I mean, I'm only the guy who set up this whole operation, landed us this little slice of heaven. Radar, sat dish, all the electronic surveillance and scanning gear.
Listen to yourself. Now I suppose you'll tell me I haven't kicked in my fair share.
Do what you want. You're going to anyway.
The sun again blazed in the colonel's face. He turned in his chair and watched as Greavy tromped up the sand, headed for the compound. Back to CNN or watching the radar screens or whatever. Powers killed 2 quick beers, forcing himself to relax and listen to the waves. Everything was beautiful. He put Greavy and all his fears out of his mind and finally felt like he could fall asleep. He figured some music, turned up to a decent volume, would help put him under. He slipped on the headphones, opened his CD box behind the cooler. What the hell, he figured. Some classic rock and one more beer. He felt his eyes grow heavy, the smile twisting one corner of his mouth, the sun on his face like a lover's touch as he drifted off.
We've got them.
It was late in the morning of his second day on Great Eczema when Commander Brockton, DEA Section Chief of Bahamas Sector 1 Midway, made the announcement. Bolin was pivoting away from the computer-enhanced digital wall map of the Bahamas to South America, a number of keys and islands already flashing red where known pirates and drug runners used them as way stations or hideouts. Once again, Bolin had Brognola to thank for getting him down here. Bolin had pored over more aerial photos, map grids, even flying along for hours on end with the DEA when he started to have some doubts. The Bahamas was an archipelago of roughly 700 islands, almost 2,500 islets and keys, stretching northwest to southeast for some 760 miles. Bolin was beginning to give up hope the combined resources of the DEA, CIA, the U.S. Navy, Customs, and Coast Guard could pin down his quarry from a mere air search alone. It helped to have some eyes in the sky, but Bolin had been forced to wait for the necessary satellite passover of the Bahamas. It was done. Almost. Commanding Special Agent Brockton came through the doorway of the prefab corrugated outpost, went up to the wall map, and pointed to an area due west of the Caicos. Then he handed Bolin an 8x11 color blow-up. The expression on his face must have been all too easy to read.
Right. There's your guy, this bastard, Colonel Powers, sitting on a beach on this little island, not much more than a sandspit, really. Word is some businessman bought it from a crooked cop in New Providence a while back, then turned around and sold it to 2 Americans about a year ago. The latest budget allocation for our war on drugs brought us a Raven EF-111A. It primarily detects hostile radar, and the radar is lighting up my Raven's screens like a pinball machine. I'll spare you the particulars. I know you're anxious to be on your way. This other sheaf of picks details every square inch of their little nest down there.
Bolin looked at the map, gauging distance, travel time by chopper, and eventually boat, putting together an attack strategy when Commander Brockton rushed to assist once again.
This should help you out, Agent Belasco. I took the liberty of marking off a point of penetration on the northwest edge of the island. Little cove, plenty of rocks there to conceal you should you decide to swim in. The Raven tells me there's only 2 pieces of electronic surveillance in the trees from that point on. 1 heat, 1 laser sensor. I marked them off, too. A little trail cuts to what looks like a big hut, a couple hundred yards to the south. Maybe they figured the rocks and lack of white sandy beach on the north side would discourage a landing. What do you need?
I could use a wetsuit, rebreather, a fast boat and a fast chopper, and a waterproof bag to stow my weapons and gear.
Look, I've got an outpost right here on the edge of North Caicos. I can have you choppered there and have a cigarette boat some drug dealer no longer has any use for on standby. Save you a whole lot of time if you were planning on taking a boat ride from here.
Bolin smiled from the heart for the first time in what felt like 100 years and offered his hand. They shook.
I appreciate all of your help, Commander.
Yeah, well, I've heard that this Colonel Powers pulled a dirty stunt involving a couple of CIA guys down in Panama during that operation to grab Noriega. Rumor has it he and a couple of spooks helped themselves to a small plane load of coke after a failed hostage rescue attempt to free some Americans. My gut's telling me the reason you're here has something to do with those terrorist attacks back in the States, and that Powers was involved in that too. This guy's an animal, and he needs to be in a cage.
Greavy tried to keep the panic off his face, but the object on their radar screen was coming in low and hard, aimed right for the northwest end of their island. A quick head count, wishing there were a few more guns than what they'd brought. Greavy pulled up the bamboo door in the floor of the living room, growling at someone to give him a hand. An extra pair of hands slipped into the narrow space, and grunting, Greavy hauled the large steamer trunk out of the floor, dumped it at his feet. He opened it, took an M16 with an M203 grenade launcher for himself. No way would he get caught short on firepower. If it was a Coast Guard plane, a DEA chopper even, he would blow it out of the sky, run and hop one of the cigarette boats on the other side of the island, be in Caracas by nightfall. Greavy headed for the open doorway, peering past the palm fronds hanging from the front porch. At a time like this, it would be helpful to have the Colonel's services. All that so-called military expertise, killing gusto, just in case a problem was, in fact, landing in paradise. But Greavy found the Colonel slumped in his chair, one arm hanging over the side, head lolling, mouth open. At first, he would have sworn the Colonel was dead. Screw him, Greavy thought. If it is nothing, I'll just have to listen to more of his crap about how he's the only one here with a real pair. If it is something, then I'll handle it. Come back, and I get to do some chuckling. Greavy found he was the only one laughing, a hollow sound, trailing off for the wall of jungle vegetation, swallowed up by the cawing of wild birds. As soon as the soldier was hunkered down in a narrow clearing off the trail, hidden by vegetation, he tapped the button on his comlink. A vibrating signal was bounced back, telling him the crew of the Sea Stallion was on the way to get the enemy nervous and running. Bolin waited, scouring the trail in both directions. From the direction of his penetration, he heard the hard chop of water spraying against the boulder-strewed inlet. Nothing the other way. From the DEA dock at North Caicos, Bolin had ridden in by a cigarette boat to a predetermined drop-off point 2 miles out to sea, then gone over the port side after a check of the shoreline through his field glasses, the boat never slowing. It was a hard dunk into the water, but Bolin wanted it to look like nothing more than some speed jockey or maybe a drug runner out there, in case eyes were watching from shore. Coming ashore, climbing deeper into the rocky inlet, he shed flippers, mask, tank, and wetsuit, his skin-tight black suit worn underneath. A watertight nylon bag contained his combat harness and weapons. The commander had been right about the lack of surveillance on this end of the island. So far, Bolin hadn't detected anything other than the 2 surveillance boxes hidden by foliage, right where Brocken had indicated them on the map. The soldier heard rotor blades, saw the foliage shimmy as the Sea Stallion went into its decoy maneuver. It came to a hovering point at the end of the trail leading out to the beach. HK-33 in hand, the executioner lowered the assault rifle when he thought he heard the rustle of clothes on leaves up the trail. He definitely heard someone grunting, maybe nearly tripping as he sensed the enemy picking up the pace. Reaching for the sound-suppressed Beretta, he expected them to send out 1, maybe 2 hard men to check out the blip on their screens. He didn't count on finding damn near a full squad marching past his point of view.
Slow it down.
Bolin held his breath, the shadows creeping by 1 by 1. 5, 6. Then he glanced up and found that it was Greavy who was growling out the orders. Bolin crouched lower in the frond leaves as Greavy started to turn in his direction, eyes wild and looking around. The man slowly walked on. The soldier waited as they kept moving past. HK-33 in hand, he reared up, glanced back down the trail, and found it clear. He managed to drop 4 right off, his line of slugs chewing through the heart of their ranks, up spines, shattering skulls. But at least 3 hard men were already looking to get off the trail, moving with the desperation of doomed men who still believed they had life left worth fighting for. Bolin winged 2 of them. Small comfort when ragged bits flew from their shoulders, since he had the full and raging attention of survivors. The soldier was plowing ahead through vegetation, filling his hands with a little bulldozer as a locust storm of steel-jacketed lead ate up the vegetation behind him. No time to accurately sight and seek out clear targets, the soldier began pumping out 40-millimeter grenades. Bolin dropped the spent rocket launcher, rammed a fresh magazine into the assault rifle, and stepped out onto the trail. He hadn't gotten a clean look at every face, but as he rolled over the dead with the toe of his boot or the smoking muzzle of his assault rifle, he didn't find Powers. Something moved in the dense brush ahead. The bloody thing rolled out. Bolin saw the eyes widen in recognition. He couldn't be sure if it was anger or bewilderment he saw, but Bolin didn't care. Greavy stared at Bolin, spent his last breath on Earth looking as if he'd been cheated out of something. Then the executioner hit him with a quick burst of permanent vacation. Primed for anything, the soldier fanned the HK-33 down the side of what appeared to be an upgraded, sprawling Quonset hut. Somehow this picture of paradise, with its allure of peace and serenity, the birds, beach, and coconuts, didn't jibe with the kind of men the warrior had left strewed down the trail. He began to wonder if Powers was even on the island. Of course, the colonel could be heading out to sea in one of three boats the commander's Raven had picked up. The executioner spotted the figure in the lounge chair just as he mounted the front steps to the big hut. The sun was setting by now, but the glassy, smooth waters beyond the white carpet of beach still winked like countless glittering diamonds as they mirrored dying daylight. Why wasn't the colonel moving, Bolin wondered, as he slowly worked his way down the beach. Half of the soldier's focus was fixed on the wall of tropical vegetation to his side, wondering if a few gunmen were concealed there. There was no itch, though, between his shoulder blades. Advancing, Bolin noted the headphones attached to a CD player, then heard the snoring. The colonel had slept right through the mop-up. As the soldier walked up behind Powers, he spotted the Beretta under a dirty magazine. He hooked a finger through the headphones, tugged them off the colonel's head, and tossed the whole thing out to sea. Bolin had the HK-33's muzzle up and aimed at Powers' face as the man jerked awake.
You'll never make it.
The warrior saw about six different expressions cross the colonel's face. The man's head most likely buzzing with a slew of questions, eyes behind the aviator shades searching for some exit.
Caught napping. But hey, what's to worry? This isn't Roxbury, right?
Velasco. I bet that's not your real name. I bet you're no G-man either.
It's over, Colonel.
Is it? You want a beer, Belasco? I got some cigars. Some of Fidel's finest right there.
Maybe later.
Couldn't just kill me in cold blood, huh? Kind of like Roxbury. You're wondering what the hell happened. Where did I go wrong? Why would a war hero sell out? Maybe thinking if you'd gunned me down in Boston, a whole lot of lives would have been spared. Bolin wasn't there to spill his guts to this traitor. He did, though, silently admit he'd perhaps made the wrong call in Boston. It was rare when the executioner second-guessed himself, but had it not been for Sudan, he caught himself, aware this journey through hell had carved a big piece out of him somewhere deep inside, seeing Animal Man sink to new lows where greed and desire were concerned. Okay, Belasco, I take you sent Greavy and his vaunted security to the happy hunting ground.
One way of putting it.
I'd offer you money to let me go, but I get the impression that you're not for sale.
Could have made it big on one of those psychic hotlines, Colonel.
I was getting tired of Greavy and the others anyway. This island was getting real small.
It was just never meant to be.
I guess so. Now what, Belasco? Bolin let the muzzle drift a few inches off the mark.
I think you know.
Paradise lost. That's the way it has to be.
Whatever beast raged inside the man roared just enough to the surface to tip Bolin off that the colonel was going for it. The executioner let the spent clip fall. The surf rolled past Bolin, absorbing the crimson runoff, taking the blood of the savage out to sea. On the way past the sprawled body, which flopped once and rolled into the surf, Bolin helped himself to one of the colonel's Havanas. He might smoke it later, but right then, he just wanted off that island. No matter how many versions of paradise on Earth were offered up his way, looking to entice him into something else than what he was, the executioner could take some small comfort he'd never become what the surf was now picking up to carry out to sea. It wouldn't be long now, and the hungry predators out there would give one of their own a fitting burial.
Mac Bolin, Deep Treachery is a Graphic Audio production. Mac Bolin is a trademark owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2001, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Casey Jones, Thomas Penny, David Coyne, Christopher Walker, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Adapted for Graphic Audio and directed by Nanette Savard. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Matt Webb and Christian Parent. The Mac Bolin theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Matt Webb, Nathaniel Perry, Chris Rowan, and Derek R. Audette. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Mac Bolan, be sure to look for Don Pendleton's Stony Man and The Executioner, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for previews of other Graphic Audio thrillers.
The following previews are of Graphic Audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Finley Campbell was a hero of the Great Rebellion, but now he's a man adrift, a warrior without a clear enemy to fight. Once the legendary masked gladiator in Golgotha's arena, his true identity unknown to all but a select few, he unwittingly killed the brother of Julian Skye, the man who would later become his best friend. It's a secret that has burned in Finley's conscience ever since.
I killed a lot of people fighting in the arenas. It's kill or be killed.
But Finley's not the only one with secrets. His true love, Evangeline, has never told him the full extent of her twisted father's depredations.
Welcome home to your daddy's loving arms.
These and other dark revelations have been dormant until now, when the web of deceit inevitably begins to unravel, with devastating consequences for the guilty and innocent alike.
And who might this person be?
How the hell are we supposed to fight something like that?
Deathstalker Honor, Episode 4. No More Secrets.
No one in Cerberus Redoubt, buried beneath a mountain peak high in the Bitterroot Range, has any clear idea what's going on just below the eastern foothills of the Andes. The Redoubt satellite coverage shows a zone of distinct change in the flora. Its thermal signature and even its color to the naked eye have changed, gone from various shades of green and brown into almost uniform blue-green, of a shade that matches no other area on the planet's surface. And it's expanding at a pace of several miles a day. A team sent to explore the phenomenon is about to get much more than they bargained for.
My God, what are they?
I don't know, but they're nothing any God created.
The array of organisms I have created have been designed specifically as successors to the corrupt cancer cells that have tormented, twisted, and tainted humans and the poor creatures of Earth for so long. They will conquer the world for our master, Gilgamesh Bates.
You'll save the world by destroying it?
I'll save the world by destroying man.
In a desperate attempt to stop the horror released on the world by Gilgamesh Bates, the men and women of Cerberus will take the battle to two fronts. Phoenix Team's mission, stop the rampaging nightmare creatures in the Peruvian Andes while holding in check two warring factions, the indigenous Shuhara tribesmen and the Liberation Army of the Republic of Marañón.
Riker, bring on the fire now! Ready? Let's get 'em!
Meanwhile, deep in the bowels of Base Abaddon, beneath the prairie of what was once known as Saskatchewan, Grant, Kane, and Bridget Baptiste will fight against time to stop the release of Gilgamesh Bates' ultimate creature of destruction.
Which way do we go once we get to the corridor?
We don't know. In the time they had before we jumped, Cerberus was unable to discover any layouts of the base. We're on our own.
No plan, no lights in the whole place. This just keeps getting better and better.
Stop whining. The base is abandoned. At least we have small fear of being discovered.
What the fuck is that?
You won't want to miss a single minute of Outlanders number 34, Successors. The USS Hampton, a guided missile cruiser, floats in the Pacific Ocean 100 miles east of Japan. Its crew prepares to conduct top-secret initial trials of the Plasma Propulsion System Multiple Delivery Missile, PPS-1 for short. The missile utilizes Teflon fuel. Its top speed is theorized at over 30,000 miles per hour. No known defense system can counter it. but the Hampton is about to be attacked by 6 unmarked and heavily armed helicopters. 37 sailors will lose their lives, another 28 will be wounded, and 5 PPS-1 missiles will be stolen.
Lieutenant Sturm, bring the phalanx to bear! Order the gunners to fire at will!
The phalanxes are out of commission, sir!
Both of them?
Yes, sir! The 127s aren't responding either!
How is this possible? It just can't be!
Captain! Look out there! Look!
Lieutenant, evacuate the...
Mac Bolan's going to need all the help he can get to retrieve the missiles. And help comes in a tight little package named Kerry Tanaka, a Stony Man operative from Tokyo, who's beautiful, intelligent, and lethal.
Look out! Up ahead, it's an ambush!
Hang on! Nice shooting!
Watch the road!
Together, they'll follow a trail of peril that will lead to an ancient fortress hidden deep in the mountains of China.
So, we finally meet face to face. The one person who might have stopped me. And you've arrived at this most momentous time. Perhaps it would be fitting to keep you on hand to witness the destruction of everything you hold dear. Or perhaps I can amuse myself by slaying you in hand-to-hand combat first.
Bring it on, General.
Mac Bolan number 82, Warlord. Don't miss it. In one of the most violent flashpoints in the world, Pakistan and India battle over control of Kashmir. Insurgents use terrorism to exert their own control. The President of the United States plans a peacekeeping mission to the subcontinent, but the insurgents have plans of their own.
Give me the bad news, Bear.
A report from Indian intelligence states that sabotage may have had a part in a recent accident involving a military train transporting 2 Sabre missiles to an Air Force launch facility in Andhra Pradesh.
If it's sabotage, you have to think Mujahideen. And if they have a couple of Sabres and know how to use them, they could program the targeting sensors to sniff out Air Force One once it's within range.
Stony Man Warriors Jack Grimaldi and Cowboy Kissinger join Mac Bolan in a peacekeeping mission of another sort to keep the sky safe for the President's plane.
Wonder how many are in there.
No telling, Cowboy. Maybe we can take the snipers out of the equation.
How's that?
You were saying how you wanted to test drive that new weapon you designed, right?
Right. One dragon's hairball coming up.
But the terrorists have an even more potent weapon, one that even the executioner has no defense against. Hostages.
Have the launcher brought out into the open. I will bring down some of the children. We'll strap them to the framework. Then we can negotiate from a position of strength. We can demand free passage back to Kashmir.
He wants us to hide behind children and barter for a chance to whimper back to Kashmir with our tails between our legs. That rather than fight. Prepare the missile for firing. I'll give you the signal.
From the southern tip of India to the teeming streets of Bangladesh, Bolan attempts to stop an act of insane violence that could spark a firestorm with dire consequences for the region and the world. Don't miss Mac Bolan number 83, Sworn Enemies, coming in April from Graphic Audio.
North Central Nevada, the Howling Coyote Restaurant.
Marty, I dropped the check on table 12.
On the big guy? Thanks, Tina.
Marty Harrison thought he had pulled it off. With the information he had squirreled away, poised to be revealed in the event of his own demise, the secret project had to let him leave, or risk exposure of things they desperately needed to keep hidden. But the new owner of the Howling Coyote soon learned that the past is always with you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, shut the fuck up and make like an oil painting and nobody else dies.
Hey, Marty boy. You know what we're here for.
It's not gonna happen. If I give you the disc, I'm a dead man.
Marty, if I don't have it in my hands in 30 seconds, I'll show you all kinds of dead people.
But the men in black don't know about the big guy at table 12.
What the fuck are you looking at, asshole?
Nothing I haven't seen before.
Mac Bolan has a talent for being in the wrong place at the right time. And all of his special talents will be needed as he finds himself sucked into a sinister secret operation that involves the use of possibly extraterrestrial technology, the exploitation of cult fanaticism, and traces all the way back to shadowy clandestine agencies in Washington, D.C.
This just gets better and better.
Mac Bolan, number 84. Dark Truth.
Stony Man, number 81. Skyhammer. Mysterious forces have unleashed a secret weapon around the globe. An NSA agent has been marked for death.
Easy now. Don't talk.
I must tell someone. New weapon for sale to anyone. Traitor. We have a traitor.
Major, what has happened? What just hit us?
I don't know, Mr. Prime Minister. It was just a flash from the sky like a thunder and lightning storm. I know the entire Jerusalem wall has been destroyed. Damn it! Where's our air cover?
Here's what we're facing, people. Skyhammer. A kinetic energy weapon in space, like molten steel falling from high orbit. There are hundreds of them up there, being launched at selected areas. No missile or anti-missile or anti-missile laser can track and lock on fast enough to do any significant damage to it before it hits.
Then we go after the people controlling it. That's the vulnerable point, the operators.
Able Team and Phoenix Force are dispatched to hunt down those responsible.
The House of Metternich. Three brothers who were once Hungarian royalty until they got deposed. One of them, Johann, changed his name to John Meterson.
The Stony Man operatives must thwart their enemies before they can unleash Skyhammer toward its ultimate target.
The Thors have started their final countdown. They'll launch as soon as the target comes into range above the horizon.
What's the target?
The United Nations building in Manhattan.
No! Hundreds of diplomats will be killed! It'll start World War III!
Stony Man 81, Skyhammer. 7 unabridged hours in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.